Hello, Internet friend. I'm David Revelle, and this is ValueSide for the Weekend, our look back at the week just passed. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSide.com. Well, today, worldwide, attitudes are changing. Inflation, war, and the specter of energy shortages are changing attitudes and perceptions nearly everywhere. Zero Hedge reports that the people of Uzbekistan fear a loss of heat in light of the record cold that the country is currently enduring. While over in India, the concern is loss of electric power as coal supplies dwindle. Pakistan, as you may know, suffered through a major power outage when government officials decided to cut off power overnight and then could not bring the grid back online the next morning. Meanwhile, in Germany, there's been a major change in the public's attitude towards nuclear power. Once a source of a third of Germany's electricity, today only three nuclear power plants are still working, but the average German would be happy to see more nuclear power plants if that meant cheap energy for this winter. On Monday, we discussed some of the difficult choices that will need to be made regarding energy and its distribution. Tuesday, we discussed the Biden administration's efforts to enhance our trade with Africa. While I heartily endorse this move, I have to ask, just what can we sell to Africa that China does not already sell to them and to us? And finally, a two-part look at our economy and some of the insights that the latest report on the nation's GDP provides. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee as we review the week just passed. Well, our relationship with energy is shaping our world. Our primary energy source remains traditional carbon-based energy, oil, natural gas, and coal. In the United States, these three energy sources represent about 80% of our current energy usage, a figure that, despite the political rhetoric you may hear, has remained remarkably steady over the last few decades. And what makes these energy sources unique is that they are fungible, readily available, and easy to transport. First, they're fungible. One coal is easily substituted for another coal, and the same is valid for oil. We can replace one kind of oil or coal with another. Yes, we may prefer the relatively clean-burning anthracite coal of the Appalachian Mountains to some of the soft coals found worldwide, but soft coal can substitute for anthracite. Or we may prefer the low-sulfur, sweet oil of Saudi Arabia or West Texas, but we can indeed replace those with some of the dense, high-sulfur oils found elsewhere in the world. Now, many countries, such as Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Canada, the world's largest oil exporters, readily export millions of barrels of oil per day. They make traditional carbon-based fuels readily available to everyone. 15 countries exported more than $17 billion worth of oil each last year. Finally, traditional carbon-based fuels are easily transportable. Massive oil tankers or pipelines have proven capable of supplying any country with the energy it needs. Energy-poor countries such as the tiny island of Japan can purchase all of their energy from overseas suppliers and operate their advanced economies. The three most significant oil importing countries in 2021 were the United States, India, and China. China, incidentally, imported an incredible $228 billion worth of oil in 2021. So fossil fuels are readily available, easily transportable, and can be substituted for one another. Of course, there are other forms of energy, but these forms usually fail to compete on one or another of the criteria. It isn't easy to transport, for instance, nuclear energy. You can't pick up and move a nuclear power plant. Wind and solar energies are closely tied to their current location. They may perform well when the wind blows and the sun shines, but conditions will influence how they operate. Renewables may not perform at all in some adverse conditions. Now, reliability and day-in and day-out performance have made carbon-based energy the most dominant energy source for several generations now. Many alternative energy forms may at some point become more dominant as their technology advances, but today's focus is on the current global state of our energy. Now, once you accept today's reality that most of our energy derives from fossil fuels, you can review current global energy policies. Although the marketing message may say one thing, the reality will likely differ. A case in point is Germany, Europe's largest economy and the sixth largest energy consumer in the world. Beginning with Chancellor Angela Merkel and now with Olaf Scholz, Germany has committed to transitioning its energy source from traditional fossil fuels to renewables, such as solar, hydro, and wind. In 2018, Germany closed all of its active coal mines, and in 2022, Germany was due to shut down all of its nuclear power plants. Although the marketing message was that Germany was becoming more environmentally responsible in its sources of energy, the reality was that their energy mix did not change significantly. Instead, they relied more on Russian oil and gas, supplied primarily via the Nord Stream pipeline. And with the destruction of that pipeline and the Germans' decision to boycott all Russian petroleum products, Germany has had to retreat on its environmental promises. Coal has been brought back in a big, big way, with estimates as high as one-third of all German electricity now again being produced by coal-fired plants. Plants that were slated to be decommissioned are operating again during the crisis. While President Biden is committed to reducing U.S. oil and gas production, circumstances may also change that decision. Biden's vision of a transition from fossil fuels led him to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline and delay or cancel building permits on federal lands, the principal source of oil exploration in America, as well as give significant subsidies and incentives for renewable energy sources. Overall, the Biden administration has been the most one-sided energy policymaker in the nation's history, favoring just one type of energy production, renewables, over all the rest. The question then arises whether some circumstances would cause us to change this commitment to renewables. If the United States, for instance, were to face the changes in sources of energy that Germany is currently faced with, would we change our policies? A close look at the current U.S. energy picture may provide an answer. The latest numbers supplied by the U.S. Energy Information Agency are for 2022. The EIA reports that the country uses significantly more fossil fuel production energy at the end of the year than we did at the beginning of 2022. From Q1 2022 until Q4 2022, our crude oil consumption rose by 760,000 barrels, natural gas by 4.8 billion cubic feet, and coal by 1 million short tons daily for all those numbers, each one daily. In contrast, the country's use of renewable energies declined by 19 trillion BTUs. Those are British thermal units, a measure of energy. Now, the reason for this reduced use of renewables is still being determined, and the EIA does not currently provide an answer. I suspect that bad weather throughout the country may have contributed to the slowdown in renewable usage. But it's not a good trend for an administration that has put all of its effort into promoting these kinds of energy sources. The mere fact that weather conditions can reduce renewable energy production should cause us all to take a look at this source more closely. It's time for us to look again at traditional source of energies that are fungible, readily available, and easy to transport. Well, the Biden administration is rolling out the red carpet for the nations of Africa. It began in mid-December when President Biden, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen hosted the U.S.-Africa Leadership Conference, the first such overture to Africa in 9 years. Now, Secretary Yellen is in Africa today, visiting several nations on the continent. She will return this Saturday after spending over a week and a half in Africa. Moreover, there is the promise that President Biden will visit the continent later this year. That's a lot of diplomatic firepower. And just when there are so many hotspots around the world, these include the NATO response to the Ukraine conflict, how to deal with the problem of inflation, Yellen will return just in time for the next meeting of the Federal Reserve, and of course, there's that little matter of those newly discovered U.S. documents that the president may want to address. So why devote all this time and energy to Africa? It seems like an odd choice, one that most American presidents have chosen to ignore. But there's a straightforward reason Biden is devoting time and energy to Africa, and it's to boost American trade, a place to sell American goods, the recognition that Africa may be the last significant marketplace. Now, there's a couple of reasons that Africa is such an emerging marketplace, and one is demographics. Africa and India are the only two places with substantially growing population. Any economist worth their salt has already projected tremendous growth in demand as Africa's population continues to boom. Africa is also growing rich from its abundant natural resources, such as gold, uranium, and cobalt, rare earth minerals and metals that advanced high-tech economies need. African oil from Nigeria and diamonds from South Africa have provided bountiful income for these countries. Now, throughout the tenure of Chinese General Secretary Xi Jinping, Africa has been on the top of his top priorities. Upon his inauguration in 2013, his very first foreign trip was to Africa. This is the most likely reason that the U.S. is now so interested in Africa. It's the looming presence of the Chinese dragon. While the Americans have sat on their hands, sending a small delegation to visit Africa every year or two, Xi has made it a central focus to meet and understand the African leaders and to develop business relationships. In the past decade, China has sent 79 diplomatic missions to Africa, dramatically outpacing the Americans. And it has paid off. China just announced that Chinese trade with Africa exceeded $280 billion last year. In contrast, the Americans' trade with Africa was less than one-tenth that level, about $23 billion. And a quick look at the Chinese and American product selection presents a disturbing picture of China's trade dominance. An insightful picture emerges as we examine the trade between the United States and China. Each country sells to the other those goods for which they have a competitive advantage. I'm looking here at trade in goods, not services or intangibles. Much of the American economy is made up of high-tech, intangible services provided, services such as Google Alphabet, Facebook, and others provide. Now, we'll exclude those kinds of companies and look just at goods that we trade with China. Three areas in American production currently have a surplus in their trade with China: Boeing aircraft and parts, automobiles, and integrated circuits. Take away these three, and by and large, we sell only agricultural and mining items to China, such as soybeans, our number one product, oil, and coal. These are not manufactured goods, and these are not items that are in short supply in Africa. We can find all these agricultural or mining products on the African continent. On the other hand, for a quick survey of the products supplied by China to the U.S., take a quick walk down any aisle in Walmart or any different American retail store of your choice. Predominantly, these goods are made in China. Long ago, the Chinese took over the American consumer market and wanted to do the same in Africa. These are just the items that many African consumers will wish to have. While I applaud the Biden administration's effort to enhance our trade with Africa, it is, after all, the right thing to do. However, there may be a more important matter at hand. The simple understanding is that the Chinese took over the American markets because Americans, by and large, did not want to make those low-profit margin retail goods that were the foundation of our manufacturing base. We found it cheaper to ship those production lines to, wait for it, China. While it's a noble effort by the Biden crew to expand our exports, we must ask, what will we sell to the Africans? Until America returns to making things, we'll have little to sell. And I'm afraid our trade picture will continue to look bleak. Where's the economy headed? It's a question I get often, and the answer is one of the most important for investors. Generally, you would rather not invest in high-growth stocks during a recession or in bonds during times of inflation. What's so interesting about the current economy is that we've dusted off an old term that economists hadn't used in 40 years. The term is stagflation. Now, stagflation combines slow economic growth, borderline recession, with high inflation. You're right. Stagflation is a difficult time for all investors, as we've seen, for both the growth investor and the income investor. For the growth-oriented investors, ones who like big tech companies, for instance, slow growth can be a challenging time. Have you noticed the number of recently laid off technology workers? It's a sign of declining earnings ahead, stagflation. And for bond investors, inflation quickly eats away at our returns. Yields need to be recalculated into real terms, that is, after accounting for inflation. Now today, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the government's chief economic bureau, will provide its initial estimate of GDP for the fourth quarter of 2022. And this estimate is the least reliable of the three estimates that the BEA will report over the next 3 months. Later, the BEA will use survey data, corporate earnings, and other reports, as well as other methods of data collection, to provide a complete picture of what's happening the last quarter of last year. Today's preliminary report on the GDP will be one of the most closely watched reports we've seen in a long time, however. There is so much that rides on this report. In Washington, President Biden is looking for good news to take people's attention away from the growing scandal. While over at the Eccles Building, the entire staff of the Federal Reserve is holding their breath to see if the economy will sustain their next interest rate move scheduled for next Wednesday. Altogether, Washington represents the Pollyanna view of the economy, with the Fed and administration hoping to see a firm GDP number. The Atlanta Federal Reserve Branch publishes a rolling estimate of our current GDP, and their latest report indicates that GDP grew at 3.5% in Q4 2022, a bullish outlook and even better than the quarter before. But the rest of the country is not as upbeat as Washington. In Manhattan, the denizens of Wall Street have a much more dour view of our economic performance. They are as far removed from Washington's perspective as I've ever seen. Wall Street believes the economy will be lucky to grow at half the rate that Washington sees. The Fed's latest blue-chip Wall Street analyst survey shows that these top analysts predict an economic growth of between 0.25%, that's almost a recession, and a top estimate of just 2.9% growth. In other words, there's a massive gap between what Wall Street sees and what Washington sees. Now, the difference in GDP growth is due to Wall Street's focus on corporate earnings and guidance, while Washington is relying on more traditional data, much of which has yet to come in. Remember, corporate results move instantly. Those layoffs, poor earnings, guidance reports, and casual conversations hit Wall Street's ears all the time. Analysts are talking to major corporate execs, financial officers, and managers, and the news must not be good. It may take Washington several weeks for their survey results to appear, but in the meantime, Wall Street is already making investment decisions based on information they now have in-house. Now, you and I can look for some of the things as we go through today's report. Last month, the BEA reported on Q3 of 2022, and we will likely see some significant changes from Q3 to Q4. Two of the industries that were powering the economy in Q3 were real estate and retail. Real estate was the fourth fastest growing group for the third quarter, while retail was the fifth fastest group. There are 22 industrial groups that GDP measures, so 4 and 5 mean that retail and real estate were among the top quintile of all industries based on their growth. Now, if you've read the headlines, you know it's unlikely that real estate is near the torrid growth levels it reached back in Q3. The same is likely valid for retail, where preliminary estimates are that the holiday sales season were poor. So as today's report flashes across your computer screen, pay particular attention to real estate and retail sales. Finally, there's an old political trick that this administration is not using, and that was a surprise to me. Whenever Washington feels the country is headed towards a recession, they kick the government hiring office into high gear. They need to add more to those 2 million government workers. This makes the employment numbers look better, as well as spreading around those government paychecks to help stimulate the economy. Now, in the third quarter, the Biden administration did just the opposite. They reduced government spending, and the reduction may be relative to the astronomical levels the quarter before, but no matter the reason, I'm looking for a significant ramp up in government spending in this report for the fourth quarter. So at 8:30 this morning, the Bureau of Economic Analysis will provide its first estimate for GDP in the fourth quarter of 2022. Lots of writing on this report. The Federal Reserve is looking for a good reading that will support its raising interest rates, while the Biden administration is also looking for a favorable GDP report that will provide, well, support. While Wall Street isn't buying any of it, their estimates remain about half the GDP models down in Washington. Yesterday morning at precisely 8:30 a.m., the preliminary estimate of the nation's gross domestic product flashed across computers across Wall Street and the country. And believe it or not, this is a moment of high drama for many in the investing world. Significant wagers are riding on its outcome. As we discussed earlier, a portfolio's design has much to do with the future economic direction. You invest in growth stocks, for instance, for a strong economy, but emphasize defense, bonds, and utilities in a weak, recession-prone economy. Yesterday's report on GDP showed the economy grew by 2.9% in the fourth quarter of 2022, the high end of Wall Street estimates, but below what most in Washington thought was going to happen. The Federal Reserve and the administration were both looking for economic growth to equal or exceed the quarter before, when growth hit 3.2%. So how's the economy doing? Answer, it is slowing from the quarter before. The economy is slowing, and this is critical to recognize, but something the press did not report. It drives me nuts to read all the headlines surrounding this report. Headlines like, GDP report beats expectations. Well, reading that headline, you would naturally assume that the economy is performing optimally. After all, it beat expectations. Well, listen, forget expectations. They are irrelevant when determining how things really are, not someone's guess about things. Now, the economy in the fourth quarter of 2022 slowed from the quarter before. Q4 was 2.9% versus 3.2% in Q3. So mark it down in red letters. The economy is slowing. Now, consumer spending, that's you and me, continued strong. And this was one piece of good news, but unfortunately, it comes with a caveat. Well, actually, a couple of caveats. We consumers may have increased our spending in that fourth quarter, and that's generally to be expected. The end of year holidays are usually a significant time for consumers to spend. But remember, we have to deal with a couple of caveats. And the first caveat, consumer spending in this report is in constant dollars, quote unquote, not dollars adjusted for inflation, but constant dollars. Now, the report measured inflation during that quarter at just over 3%. So the first 3% of any increase in consumer spending reflects just inflation and does not reflect consumer sentiment. The other question on consumer spending is, what did we spend our money on? Was it just a reflection of higher living expenses? Or did we go out and make a few extra purchases, the kind of purchase that would help spur the economy? The answer to these questions will be critical in how we view the economy this year, but we won't get them for another month or so. Yesterday, you'll recall, we did make a few educated guesses on this GDP report. The first area we predicted was real estate, and it didn't take a genius to predict that real estate was falling. Real estate fell from the fourth best sector last quarter to the poorest performer in this report. And if we look solely at this report, we predict that real estate is leading us into a recession. I'd like to see a few more data points before we make that call, and we'll all have to wait for more detail in the following two GDP updates over the next couple of months. But there's no doubt that real estate is sick, real sick. Finally, there's that old political trick that we talked about yesterday. When the economy begins to look a little peaked, Washington reaches back into its wallet and starts to spend and hire as many people as possible. Now, yes, I know, this president is the all-time champ at spending. But wait, if it looks like a recession is on the way, money from Washington will flow like water, even more than it is right now. Now, the process has already begun. Yesterday, we discussed how government spending declined in the third quarter of 2022. Well, that was then. In the fourth quarter, government spending turned it all around and is now positive again. It's easy to predict that this is a trend that will gain momentum if there's any weakness in the economy. So there you have it. The first estimate on the economic performance, the GDP, of the economy during the fourth quarter of 2022. Overall, it's a positive reading, but one which did slow from the quarter before. Some open questions remain about what's driving consumer spending and how much the government will spend to stave off any potential recession. But the one significant factor that we cannot ignore is the sickly performance of real estate. This sector went from one of the best areas of the economy to one of the weakest, in fact, the weakest. And of course, driving this poor performance has been the rising interest rates. Oh yes, the Fed meets next Wednesday to raise interest rates even further. Best of luck to my friends in real estate. This is going to hurt a little. Brace yourselves. And that's ValueSide for Friday, January 27. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSide.com. I'm David Revelle. ValueSide is independently written and researched. The views expressed are strictly my own.